quiet here waiting for a few more people. Perhaps what I suggest we could do, because we have one item on the agenda, which is a report, and therefore we don't need to vote on it, which is the waitlist service. So perhaps, Marilyn, you might like to give that now.
Sure. The waitlist issue was referred to the Names Council by the board and in a board resolution, and then referred by the and the board resolution suggested that the board could be guided by input from the Transfers Task Force. The Names Council referred the waitlist issue to the Transfers Task Force. We have had two open conference calls, meaning that they are open to anyone who is interested in participating. We publicize them by having Glenn send a email to every constituency, as well as advising the GA and making it available. Some of the registrars, I think, widely distributed the information about it as well. We had 19 people on each of the calls. There was some overlap, but we also had new people on each of the calls. And I've prepared a summary, which is posted on the archive. We will be making a status report, sending it to the Names Council on the 4th for consideration at our next meeting, and it then needs to go forward to the board by the 10th of June. It will be a status report on both our conclusions and on what else we think may need to be done further, if anything. We are going to have a conference call on Friday of this week that we're still trying to get people gathered for, that will just be a Transfers Task Force call to try to walk through the draft, which we'll submit on the 4th.
Okay, for clarification, then, your conclusions will be effectively the reaction to the proposals on the waitlist service from VeriSign. And then recommendations may be, and these are some other things to think about. Is that how you're structuring it?
The resolution from the board really gave us an assignment of, which people sometimes overlook, gave us an assignment of examining the issues related to deletions, possible solutions, and, comma, the VeriSign waitlisting proposal. And because of the previous experience with the waitlisting proposal, it's been easy to overlook that the assignment is actually to look at the issues related to deletions.
Uh-huh.
So our report will give a status on what we have been able to garner so far in relation to deletions, and some suggestions have actually emerged for possible steps that ICANN could take that would help to, in addition to support for the redemption period. There's some gems that are emerging from the discussion that of ways to ameliorate the harm or problems that might result to registrants, as well as possible other ways to lessen the load on the registry. And then we will also make some comments in particular about the VeriSign waitlisting service, which is what we were asked to do. So three things, really: deletion, solutions related to deletion, and then the waitlisting proposal from VeriSign.
Okay. Questions from Marilyn?
This is Bruce Tonkin. Just a question for Marilyn. What do you believe the current consensus is on the VeriSign waitlist proposal? Do you feel that there is strong support, weak support, no support? What's just a rough feeling?
Well, so far, there's extremely limited support voiced, and it's difficult to detect much support for the waitlisting service at this point.
But there is, and now I gather from reading your paper that there seems to be strong support for the concept of a redemption period.
Yeah, and for a couple of other steps, Bruce, to try to make sure that people don't get caught up, that registrants don't get caught in the deletion process inadvertently.
Yeah, that's essentially what the redemption proposal is intended to do.
Right. We haven't talked, one thing I hope to talk about on Friday, and I I don't mean, Philip, when you get to quorum, I don't want to overrun your time, the time here. One thing we haven't talked about is whether the idea of the time frame put forward is the right time frame, and I think we need to talk about that because there really hasn't been enough discussion anywhere about the time frame. Or,
well, I guess the registrar's comment is probably that it's been discussed for months and months and months amongst registries mm-hmm. and registrars. So I'd say that there's, I can't see anything, any new information that you could possibly get that doesn't already exist.
On what the time frame should be for redemption?
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant the time frame to make a recommendation.
Oh, no, no, sorry.
Sorry, the time frame, you mean whether it's 30 days or not, yeah, I agree, that's
yeah. And I think that's actually an easy discussion and one where there shouldn't be, I can't imagine there's going to be much dissension about the time frame. I just think it's important to talk about it and take into account someone could be on vacation for 2 weeks. You know, we just need to talk through with some information really from the registrar and registry participants and others who are representing registrants, what's an appropriate time frame so that people get the benefit of the redemption period.
Yeah, you know, I think the answer to something like that is it doesn't matter what number you choose, it's just a judgment that you make, and then you learn from experience. So you pick whether it's 14 days or you pick 30 days and you see whether that seems to address 90% of the problems. You're never going to solve everything.
Right.
It would be nice if we could make a statement with that issue and set a very quick parameter, give it a little bit more kicking around and come out with something constructive, let's say by the 10th of June. That's 2 weeks. I can't believe it would take 2 weeks to make a decision that's going to be somewhat arbitrary anyway and may need fine-tuning down the road. But to just keep dragging things like that out, make it only accentuates the fact that sometimes we just can't seem to arrive at any decisions, and I don't think that's the case.
Yeah. Ken, I think that's quite fair, and my hope is that those are the kinds of things that we could just be almost definitive about and say, you know, we can get it out there, and any comment on it ought to be done by the time of the board meeting so that certain decisions could be taken. There are some other things that may be more controversial where the task force may not feel that there's been enough input. I need to hear more from them on that. But some of these steps, right now I would say we ought to be able to say, here's the idea, here's the task force recommendation, here's how we gathered input, here's, you know, let's make this decision by this day.
And then even on the redemption period, I mean, ICANN put a paper out many months ago on that, so, I mean, that's not something that's new either. So I guess there's already been a lot of time for people to comment on whether they thought that was reasonable or not.
Mr. Ruth has joined the conference.
Not to dwell on this, but people have been a little distracted with the amount of work that's been going on.
Yes, exactly. I know the feeling.
Okay, we're currently one short of quorum. Perhaps what I suggest we do to save time is to at least start our discussions on the recommendations, and hopefully by the time we reach the point of adoption, we will have reached quorum.
I guess a point of process. It's Bruce Tonkin, Philip.
Yep, Bruce, go ahead.
Is it worth spending a lot of time on our recommendations when we could perhaps be addressing the papers ICANN has recently published and commenting on some of those?
I think we're sort of what we're trying to do really is the same thing. I think what certainly the current frontier recommendations that I've drafted for discussion, that's 26 onwards, reflect very much the working paper which the evaluation committee produced the one on policy development and the third one on the nominating committee concept. So I think the key issues from those two are encapsulated in part of what we've already done, but also this next section. So I'm hoping that the discussion will cover the two, but also have that item on the agenda for anything that we don't cover there to comment on subsequently.
How far are we from being quarry?
One. We're one short.
Counting proxies as well?
For quorum, we actually have to have a physical number present. That's 11.
So could we use just a bit of this time then, actually, to share any information which we have that seems factual about the board retreat?
That's not a bad idea. Yeah. Who would have information to offer on that?
This is Harold Feld. I've just seen what Andy Mueller-Mond posted, which Jamie Love then retransferred to the non-commercial list.
Okay, so that would be Harold. Madden, you have something to say also on that?
Yeah, it's not accurate necessarily. Some of the conclusions that he came to on staffing issues are not correct at all.
Okay, and that's Ken.
That came from the people who are being discussed by Andy. So, if that's of any value to anybody.
Okay.
The things that might be useful, it might be discussions that were reported or that seem factual about. My understanding is there's still that the board is not inclined to have an at-large election at this time. That should be no surprise. I didn't see that as a change from the decision that was taken in Accra, and that there is a strong bent of support toward a nominating committee. Those were the two things that I noted most from the posting.
Okay, may I answer that? Harold, then, let me know what you had, and if you're able to distinguish, as Ken was suggesting, between what you think is factual and what is opinion, that would help us as well.
Has everyone seen this summary? Is it something that should be forwarded to the council mailing list?
This is Bryce talking. I haven't seen it.
All right. Well, I will forward it then. But I don't have anything much to add beyond what I read on the email list, as it were. I haven't heard from anybody else, so I have no way of verifying anything other than to say I did. In reference to what Ken says, while Andy may be wrong in his conclusions, I have no doubt that he is. Trying to report as accurately as he perceives it.
I'm not going to argue one way or the other on that. It's just that when you start talking about employment, personnel, or any other issue like that, it's somewhat irresponsible to pass that out publicly without some sort of a reconfirmation. That's what concerns me. I don't care what culture you come from. That's all.
Concerning the employment stuff, that is Stuart Lynn's retirement in March and Andy McLaughlin going half time. That's confirmed on the by an ICANN announcement by now. And just to add to this, Joe Sims posted to the GA list today a message similar to what Ken said, namely that some of what Andy said was apparently inaccurate, according to Sims, but it is certainly not clear what he is alluding to. And also, I would like to confirm the point which was made before, that you can generally expect that Andy is trying to pass on information in good faith and as accurate as he can.
Oh, I understand that. I'm not criticizing him for good faith effort. All I'm saying is that. And with certain issues, it would have been best if those issues had been vetted more closely. With respect to policy development and discussions amongst the members, Andy passing that on is strictly his own it's a decision that he has to make as to whether or not he feels it's material and relevant, but... That's all. It's not worth going into any further than that. I'm sorry if I'm not trying to stir the pot or create controversy there.
Can't we have no controversy?
Oh my God! How boring.
So we're all in violent agreement then.
Oh, I have cinch bugs in my lawn though. So.
Now, Ken, we're not going to talk gardening. I mean, we better get a quorum quick.
I have forwarded this, by the way, to the council list, so it should show up any minute now for those of you who have email access.
Okay, Harold, thanks for that. Does anyone else have information on the outcome of the board retreat?
Actually, the only thing that, I don't know that this is outcome of the board retreat, but my expectation, and I can't tell you that it's founded on anything, is that we will probably, unless I thought I had seen this, that we will probably see a document coming out toward the end of the week?
Yes. I think that was also in the Joe Sims posting. I have to check right a moment.
Yeah.
This will be an official conclusions of the board retreat being made public.
I think it's going to be sort of like next iteration or something on sort of, that was my understanding.
Right. Okay, let's move on to discussion recommendations, bearing in mind we're one short of quorum, but that may help us at least set up things for adoption subsequently if we achieve that on the call. If not, we'll have to think of some other mechanism.
Now, Philip, this is Jay Scott.
Jay Scott.
You know I'm here.
Yeah, Jay Scott, you're very welcome. Thank you. Yes, I do.
You didn't say anything, and given that we were short, I wanted to...
All right, just to make sure. Yeah, indeed, welcome. Let's just check this again. We are still one short. So what we have in version 10 of our recommendations now, this is starting at recommendation 26, is some further iterations in terms of policy development bodies and their nature. And what I've done is suggested a number of recommendations and some options within those that basically build us towards a vision of how we see the board composition being, but they are necessary steps to think about before we get to that stage. Which is why there are a number of things in there which we haven't discussed before, but are nevertheless there because of their relevance to the board. Not least of which is recommendation 26 on technical bodies, in which the wording at the moment is there should be separate policy development bodies for addressing and protocols. So what we're saying here is, in fact, two things, one of which, indeed, there should be policy development bodies for these two issue areas, addressing and protocols, but in reaction to discussion there's been about the possible merging of such bodies, and based on the feedback that there's been about the concept of having one technical body, the suggestion here is that there should continue to be two separate bodies for addressing and protocols. Who would like to speak on that issue?
Philip, could I get into the end of the queue to make one remark about what we discussed before? I have found that message about the announcement.
Okay, Thomas, I'll let that to the end of the queue. And on this issue, who would want to speak?
I did.
Marilyn, anyone else?
Harold.
Tony.
I didn't hear that. Can you repeat?
Tony, Philip.
Tony, all right, thanks. That was sounding good. Who else would like to speak? Nobody at the moment? Okay, then we start with Marilyn.
I support keeping the PSO and the ASO separate. I really think that they have separate functions to perform and that merging them together is going to be an unnatural alliance. I'm probably going to hear about the use of that word later, but there's no logic that brings the to participate in the support of policy in the PSO and the ASO together on all issues. So I think there's a distinction to me in looking for ways to improve the interaction and consultation between all of the SOs, which I'll speak to again later, versus throwing people into a space and expecting them to have a natural affinity to work together. There's no logic that I can see that would bring those two different groups with different purposes together, and I support keeping them separate but working toward improved relationships and even trying to encourage where we can at least one meeting a year that takes place with everyone in the same place, preferably around the annual meeting of ICANN.
Okay, thank you for that, Marilyn. Harold?
I am puzzled, and I guess perhaps I should just ask Marilyn to explain a little further. What is the, from my perspective, the community was very much the same. I mean, it's true that there are different issues that are being addressed, but in terms of the question of having the technical expertise on the board, the two communities to me look very much the same, and in fact it seems that there is a fair amount of back and forth of the individuals, many who are on air and participate in the IETF, and from the perspective of what is to be represented on the board, if this is a question of representing sort of general technical expertise and familiarity with the issues rather than representing a particular constituency, which is always how board membership has been explained, I don't see why you need to have the separate representation.
Okay, Harold, thanks for that comment. Maybe Tony, you may be able to answer that as well as making your original point, but let me know if not, Tony.
Okay. Certainly from the ISPCP perspective, we very much support the approach that's been taken up until now, which is the involvement of both of these groups and in the form that they are now as well. In terms of the representation, well, certainly there is a need to have some technical content in some of the broader issues that I think are dealt with at board level. So that's the prime requirement. The other issues I probably need to come back to when we get further down the page, perhaps when we get down to recommendation 28. But in supporting it now, there's no need for them to come together whatsoever, other than the point that Marilyn picked up, and I think there is a need for better coordination. But that just isn't related to these two bodies. It's right across the piece.
Right.
And Philip, I want to just offer one amendment to what I said earlier as a follow-on to Tom.
Okay.
We have found in the DC a significant usefulness and advantage of being able to reach out to the technical community individually and bring in an expert on a particular area to help advance the understanding of our thinking related to policy. And that's really one of the things that I wanted to illustrate that we are missing right now. And it doesn't go to address the point that Harold asked of why not put them all in, you know, one big group, but it goes more toward the point I was making about our need to improve and strengthen relationships. Having Clemson, having Patrick Folsom, having Harold, having Roberto, having people come in and, give presentations on alternate routes, on above the DNS, so above the DNS labeling, other things of that nature have been very, very helpful to inform the broad understanding of particularly the broad, I think, the commercial constituencies in particular.
If I could come back on that, Philip.
Go ahead.
For a moment. The point that Marilyn made was specifically related to the BC. The same points have gone at times for the ISPs as well, but I think it's more important to recognise that type of input is also required at board level, and under the current structure there's clearly a way that happens. If you take that away, there are instances where it's likely to fall away quickly.
Sure, all right. And as I understand it, I mean, it's very easy for the non-technical people like myself to want to lump all technical people together, but actually the things they're doing are not only distinct but also very much the core mission of ICANN. So to my mind, there is a sensible logic which was created initially to have them as separate bodies that I don't think is has changed, as far as I understand it. Other comments or questions on this recommendation? Okay. Do I take it then that we're happy to adopt that subject to a court vote? I presume that silence would be yes.
Actually, Philip,
yeah?
I would like to propose a friendly amendment to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it would go something like there should be separate policy development bodies for addressing and protocols. You know, we aren't making any statement there about the linkage, and I don't know if this is the place to put it, but we need to have some kind of a statement somewhere about this, the need to have a process, a more effective process for consultation and ongoing communication across the SOs. So wherever we put that point, we need to come back to it. Maybe it is a separate item unto itself about the process for communication and consultation across SOs that would be better, and that way we could address the CCTLD and GTLD SOs as well.
Okay, well, I think we've incorporated those comments perhaps in relation to those before. Maybe a second sentence such as there needs to be more effective mechanisms for cross-policy development body consultation could capture that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is anybody opposed to that addition?
I'm not opposed. This is Harold. I'm not opposed. I do have one. I'd like to make one point after this before we call a roll here.
Okay. Then go ahead and make that point now, Harold.
All right. My one concern about voting on these things now is that, on this particular recommendation now, is that it seems to me that these recommendations are generally very much interrelated, and we may, I'm concerned, maybe not so much on this one, but on some of the others, that we really should take these together rather than piecemeal in terms of approving final wording.
Sure, that's accepted. I think one of the things that I was trying to do was separate, if you like, the points of principle before we got to the points of sort of subsequent mathematics, if you like. But your point is well taken, Harold. It's difficult sometimes to separate such issues. Did I hear an announcement that somebody had just joined us?
Yeah, it was me. I dropped off.
Ah, okay. That was...
It got...
It's fine. Yeah, that doesn't help us in. So that was recommendation 26. Thomas, you had a point you wanted to make, I think, about earlier recommendations. Please make that now.
Yes. I didn't want to make a point about earlier recommendations, actually, but Marilyn was it who mentioned that there was a message that a paper would be forthcoming this week. That announcement was contained in a message your Sims sent to the GA list. I suppose I'll just read a few sentences of this to you to give you some more information.
Okay.
Joe writes, I hope and believe that the board members left the retreat with a better understanding of the issues and their complexities and of the perspectives of their fellow board members than they had before the retreat. Certainly, the Evolution and Reform Committee members have a deeper understanding of the perspectives of their colleagues to this material they and others have produced over the last several months, and this will be helpful in the committee's production of recommendations to the board and the community, which hopefully will be published later this week. That was the message which was alluded to earlier. So what we should expect most likely is another forthcoming paper from the R&E committee.
Right, excellent. Thanks for that, Thomas. Good clarification. So let's move on to recommendation 27. This is also very short. This concerns, this is under the general heading of advisory bodies, is distinct from policy development bodies. And we're saying simply about government, there should be a government advisory body, indeed such as the GAC at the moment. Would anyone like to speak on that?
I will, Philip.
Tony, anyone else?
Maybe. Let me reserve my thoughts on that.
Okay, no problem. Anyone else? No, then Tony, go ahead.
Okay, well, certainly it's a concept that is well supported from our side. However, I don't think it's working in the best way, and with this recommendation, again, I'd like to see whether we can perhaps amend it a little.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, I think the GAC is lacking both in terms of its outreach, its actual membership. Even if people can't actively attend, I don't believe that the word is getting out as even the GAC would want it to about their activities. But the critical point, and the point I'd particularly like to address, is the fact that this group, they don't seem to coordinate in any way with the rest of ICANN, particularly from the DNSO side. So one of the things I would particularly like to try and add to this is the recommendation that we need to make sure that there's much wider and broader coordination with the GAC and the rest of the ICANN structure, particularly the DNSO.
Philip, yeah. Can you put me in the queue, please?
So was that Ken?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Harry, too, please.
And Philip, I do want to be in the queue.
Okay, so I had Marilyn, I had Ken, and one more I didn't hear.
Harry.
Gary.
Yep.
Okay, Ken, go ahead.
with respect to the last comment that Tony made, I would support that. With respect to the structure and the way that the GAC is organized, I do not feel that it is our responsibility or it's within our purview to start making recommendations as to how they should organize more efficiently and effectively, because we have our own perspectives that should stay with us. I think each constituency has in the past expressed a significant amount of resentment to other constituencies dipping into their purview and telling them how they should operate and do their own business. And as with the GAC, I feel that's the same issue there. I think they need to organize in a manner that they feel is most effective for them with respect to getting increased communication between the various constituencies, the DNSO and the GAC. I strongly encourage that.
Could I just clarify that point, Philip?
Tony, go ahead, yeah.
Yes, with respect to Ken's remark, I wasn't suggesting in any way that that's something we should formally comment on. It was just an expression of the situation as I see it. I wasn't for 1 minute suggesting we should tell them what they should be doing in any way.
Sure, and it may be a question of phrasing it. I mean, perhaps we can say more neutrally something like there needs to be improved coordination with the ICANN policy development bodies and the board. Which leaves it open in terms of how that mechanism is done, in terms of who does what, but it's not actually interfering in an internal process.
Maybe what you could do is acknowledge the benefits that can be obtained by having a consultative process here with government bodies, and encourage increased communication. But rather than go any further than that, I couldn't support that without going back to the constituency and
sure.
And getting a real consultation on that.
Yeah. That would be fine, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's noted. Carrie, you're next on the list.
I'm actually have a question about the structure of recommendations 26 through 30, the disposition of them. 26
yep.
Takes two of them under one heading. There are the two technical policy development bodies. As a
yep.
single recommendation. And then the next is the advisory bodies, where we have one recommendation each for government and technical.
Yep.
Now, why do we not have two under the heading policy development bodies? Why is it not a technical?
If you notice, policy development bodies has got a Roman two following it.
Yes, well, I'm suggesting
that simply reflects the fact that we have already covered policy development bodies in terms of the GTLD policy development body and the CCDLD policy development body, and this is something that that is a new recommendation, but in a final version, I may well make a more logical numbering.
I think that's what I'm calling for, because
yeah.
then we go on to the board composition and size, where we have a recommendation for all of the advisory bodies that we have named and a recommendation for all of the policy bodies that we have
exactly.
named.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. No, I think we're on the same page. I was just trying to... to keep the numbering sequential for the purposes of agreement.
Okay, so any inconsistency that I perceive right now is solely the disposition of the discussion document, but may not be reflected in the discussion, in the...
Correct. Okay. Yeah, thanks for that. Marilyn, you're next.
I've actually spent a fair amount of time. I've talked to about 8 or 9 GAC members individually, as some of the rest of you have, I know, about this particular issue related to communication. And I held a meeting in Washington recently and met with representatives of several of the missions from several countries, not just Europe, but several other countries, Japan, Australia. And we discussed the need for improved ongoing communication. I agree with the fact we need to be sensitive in how we state it, but I think it's really important, recognizing that the GAC is now meeting among itself on a more consistent basis, and probably will try to continue that. They intend to have a secretariat which would convene them in some way and maintain communication between the board meetings, and they have begun to talk about their views about GTLD policy, not just the overall functioning of ICANN and the concerns of government in specific to CCTLD. So I think we really should make a positive and proactive statement in some way about the benefits of there being a mechanism for consultation and communication across the SOs, but with a particular focus on the policy bodies that are developing policy for both CCTLDs and for GTLDs. I know we need to be sensitive about language, but I think it's a very important statement for us to make. Having the GAC meet in a closed room and there be no flow of information or communication or exchange of ideas merely means that what we end up doing is having resolutions thrown out that we haven't been able to consult on, and I think we would have a richer experience both ways.
Okay. Anyone else want to comment? Well, let me propose the following wording then for this recommendation. There should be a government advisory body, full stop. There needs to be an improved flow of communication and better coordination with the ICANN policy development bodies. Does that capture what we've said so far? I'm hearing silence. I'm taking that as consent. Do I take it that were we to vote, that would you'd all be happy with that as we drafted?
Yep.
Okay, that's good. Now, recommendation 28, also on advisory bodies in technical. This is picking up an idea that was in the LIM proposal that has also been, I think, given some positive resonance, if I remember correctly, in the working papers from the Structure Nominating Committee, as in the Evaluation Committee. It clearly links also to our earlier recommendation in terms of two separate policy development bodies. And I think the idea behind it was really factoring in elsewhere where there is technical advice that ICANN has, and it's essentially attempting to help centralize that in a way that will be useful for the board, and this may potentially have an effect later on in terms of board composition, but of course need not necessarily in terms of the recommendations. So comments on recommendation 28, which reads, there should be a technical advisory body along the line specified in the LIN proposal.
Tony had Philip, if I can add my name to the queue.
Start kick off. Who else?
Harold. So
Harold. Who else? Nope. Then Tony, start, please.
Okay. If you look at the way the technical advisory committee was proposed, the structure of it and the membership of it set out in Stuart's paper, and we've already accepted that we should have separate policy bodies for addressing protocols, then I don't think that those two things actually fit together very well at all. If you're going to have a protocol organization, then I cannot see how it fits alongside what this technical advisory committee is going to do. And if you look at the makeup of the technical advisory committee, then it certainly embraces the protocol people, but as well as that, it embraces the RIRs, the root service, and also three by nominating committee as well. So it's far broader than protocols, and the two things together don't seem to actually cover off the policy angles in any coherent way. So having agreed what we did in 26, I think this takes a tack that actually challenges that recommendation which we made earlier.
All right. So do you think that the consistent logic in the LIM proposal was already based on the fact that there will be only one technical body, and this was a means of sort of, I know, factoring in some the way that technical body may either participate or others may participate?
That's my understanding, yes.
Right. Okay.
Philip, can I get in the queue on
your... Marilyn, you should add you to the queue. Harold, you were next.
I would just echo those the comments that I don't understand how what this is going to do fits with having the separate addressing and protocol policy organizations, and I would like someone to explain how those pieces mesh together.
Okay, so that was essentially supporting Tony's earlier comment. Marilyn?
I guess I'm a bit torn on this, and it comes from a political concern. I agree, there seems to have been a view that the PSO was not working effectively or not providing ongoing technical consultation. And for that reason, the idea was to collapse, as I could sort of see this, collapse the ASO and the PSO together, thinking that, and then pull out a technical advisory group, which would be identified and knowledgeable experts that would be immediately tappable. So by our message, I think, is the PSO, if it's not working, needs to be fixed, and needs to be the primary resource of drawing on technical advice. At the same time, clearly the board has the ability now to launch a special advisory group related to internationalized names where technical expertise is needed, or security where technical expertise is needed. So I'm kind of torn, because this technical advisory body will compete with the space that the PSO and ASO should be filling. That is not necessarily a good thing. It may mean that the PSO and ASO never fully develop their communication process with ICANN and the rest of the SOs. But politically, I think at some point we need to figure out what our priorities are, to sort of put down and put the Names Council advocacy behind. And this one, while I have concerns about it, probably is lower in my, from the BC list, I think, in terms of saying there's no need for this. We would probably put our political concerns in some of the other areas.
Right. I think I'm going to be persuaded by what the council is saying. One of the composition of the technical advisory committee, as foreseen in the Lynn paper, was seven members, four ex officio, a designee of the Internet Architecture Board, one designee of the RIRs, one from the root name server operators, and one from domain name Gredestries. Three other persons from the non-com process who may be representatives of groups such as ETSI, the ITU, there's that word again, or others. Are the, besides perhaps those nominating committee people, amongst that first group, are all those groups sufficiently represented by the addressing and protocol separate bodies?
Yeah, Bruce Tonkin, if I
could
be in the queue on this.
Speak now, Bruce. Yeah.
Yeah, look, I think I'd have a different perspective. I am a technical person, and I can see the value of the Technical Advisory Committee. One of the things it does do is it is right across all the other organisations. I don't view it being the same thing as the Protocol Supporting Organisation. That, to me, and the same with the Address Supporting Organisation, is focused on policies in their area of interest. The advisory committee is not to produce policy. It is to produce technical advice. And a lot of that advice relates to operational issues, which are not just located on one particular protocol, nor are they to do with one particular address space. Okay. So my view, and I think it's also in the registrar's constituency document, is in support of a technical advisory body.
Could I come back on that, Philip?
Tony, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, so I hear what Bruce is saying, and I think that there is a need to address that. But I'm not sure that you cannot address that need through the existing structure, certainly with the registrars involved, with the ASO and the PSO. Then I think you have, and also, of course, the root server operators, you have all the elements that you need to be involved in those technical discussions. One thing that hasn't been spoken about here is the issue of protocols. And one thing that the PSO has achieved, I think, is to make sure that we don't have conflicting protocols developed across the piece. Now, that's something that certainly the IETF people have very strong views on. And the PSO has been a way of fixing that problem. I wouldn't want to see that diminished or the ability to fix that taken away. And if you reconstitute ICANN with just this TAC, then I think you do lose that ability. So we actually sacrifice something for the gains that we can have through a technical advisory committee that I think need to be recognized but can be fixed in other ways.
Okay. Bruce, are you persuaded by that?
No.
Philip, can I ask Bruce a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Bruce, I made the point earlier that I am concerned about too many competing and overlapping and unconnected processes that then have to be reconnected. And, you know, it sounds to me like what you're describing is a need, and what this proposes is a definitive structure of how to meet that need. But there really is no reason that your need could not be met by drawing from the ASO and PSO to identify and make available a group of technical advisors who could be available and represent the positions. I mean, we're talking about just putting somebody on here, on this list, means there still has to be a process behind them. And
I quite agree, Mara. And all I'm saying is it's more than just the ASO and PSO. And if you look at the structure of that technical advisory committee, I agree with the structure in terms of it's much broader representation. It actually takes out of the whole ICANN structure, which is, you know, registries, registrars, root server operators, the whole kit and caboodle, if you like. And it's a smaller subset of those people. So I think it is a good idea, but I agree with you. It does need to be backed by process, as it does all of these groups. And it needs to be clear what is something that's dealt with as a seeking advice or information, as opposed to seeking a policy decision. This is not a body to create policy.
Yeah. Could I come in here?
Sure, Tony. Yes, I think on the policy question, I think one of the things that I've tried to distinguish in the language we're using here is the difference between what we're describing as policy development bodies and what we're describing as advisory bodies. Hence, the government advisory body and this one. Tony.
Well, the way this was described in the Lim paper was basically technical aspects dealing with the operational responsibilities, and that's exactly what Bruce put forward. So clearly there is a need for that to be considered. But at the same time, if I look back at what ICANN has done over the past few years, I can't think of anything that's fallen apart because we haven't had this committee. What we do have is the key people involved, and all we have here is a list of nominees and key members out of the various parts of the structure. As Marilyn says, that has to be underpinned by process, and I think that process has already been met in other ways. I just cannot understand what this is going to achieve that's new that hasn't been accomplished through other mechanisms which have worked just as well in the past.
Well, take security as an example. I mean, I think that's been a good example. I actually applaud ICANN's process on security in the November meeting last year. But that actually was input from a range of different areas, and ICANN formed a security committee. And admittedly, it has been bogged down with there's been so many other things for the same individuals. But simply, if you wanted to get an assessment of current security risk, if some denial of service attack came up or something, you could very quickly put that to an advisory committee, and each of the people could say, these are the risks.
Okay, is in fact the difference we're discussing now, the difference between a fixed standing body and committees that you may set up for specific issues, and are we saying that in terms of the, you know, the bodies you create for your organization to work, we see overlap at the moment between a technical advisory body and separate addressing the protocol policy development bodies, but we nevertheless see a need for technical advisory committees on specific issues, which
yes,
may have a long time.
I mean, here's another analogy. In a normal board, if you forget having a whole committee, you just talk about an individual, a board will often have a technical advisor, a legal advisor, a financial advisor. You know, these are people the board can go and get some advice on a particular matter. That advisor is not the person that's forming the policy. It's merely providing advice.
Right.
I think I was starting to go down a similar line to you, Philip, where maybe there is a need for this type of function, but it doesn't have to be a standing committee. And I wouldn't want to see the PSO jeopardized for that. If, to cover off the type of issues that Bruce alluded to, there was a recognized committee of basically people with technical knowledge that this could be referred to just to start the process going, then I think that's a separate issue, and that's something I could support as a concept.
Uh-huh.
But to actually replace the PSO with this, then I think they actually lose out, and all we're doing is making something a little bit slicker that we can do in a different way.
Yeah,
so,
but I don't think we're talking about replacing the PSO. I'm not sure where that's coming to the discussion.
Well, when I looked at the structure set out by Stuart, the PSO disappeared, and what was replaced was this technical advisory committee.
Yeah, that wasn't the intent, I don't think. I think in Stuart Lynn's proposal, he thought that the PSO and ASO could be combined into one group, and that the technical advisory was a separate issue dealing with advice. I didn't see Stuart Lynn's proposal treating this as the replacement for the PSO.
I think there was some naivete perhaps on the impact that it would have on the broad technical community of dissolving the PSO as a functional group. And I do think you're right. He was trying to just find some centers of excellence to go to, but there's a broader ongoing initiative that needs to be supported.
Yeah, and look, I agree with you, Marilyn, in the sense that it shouldn't be competing or be different. You know, that comes down to defining the policies and procedures that go underneath these, and I agree with you there. But I do think there's a separate role.
Mm-hmm.
Need, if you like.
How about this then, as a compromise wording, which may capture what we've discussed so far? There should be ad hoc technical advisory committees, but there is probably no need for a standing technical advisory body. Does that capture what we've discussed so far?
Carrie, to speak, please.
Carrie, anybody else?
Who determines when the ad hoc threshold has been reached? Now, this sort of seems like I'm asking for trouble, people wanting to ad hoc themselves in and out of existence.
This is Harold. Can I get into the queue?
Into the queue, Harold, yes. I mean, sure, how the ad hocs are treated is one thing. I think the difference I see is that ad hoc committees are standalone and just do the job the committee is asked to do. There was a board in Tunisburg. There was also a board seat implication on the technical advisory committee, which standing technical advisory body.
We have done some extension to that. The ad hoc, whatever condition it is that might require the convening of an ad hoc group,
uh-huh.
Explicitly not allowing a group to convene because it feels that it should be represented on the board.
Sure. Yes, perhaps it's how we define ad hoc. What I was meaning by that was where the need is foreseen in brackets by the board.
An ad hoc group to be convened as technical reason arises, but without representation on the board.
Committees, or so convened by the board, that would.
Okay.
After that, yeah.
Well, wait, Philip, I think that that actually defeats the purpose that Bruce described and that I think actually exists, and unless I misunderstand this. I think the point is, in the idea of a technical advisory committee or body, is that there's an identified group of experts that could be turned to, as opposed to convened, that could be turned to for technical advice quickly.
Yeah, but I mean, they could exist. I mean, we're not saying that these bodies disappear the moment they've been asked to comment on one question.
Or we could, in Carrigan, we could do things the same, combine both of these, that we allow the notion of an advisory agency, which does not, by virtue of that fact, enjoy entitlement to board representation.
So the key point, Carrie, that you're making, which I think I agree with, is a technical advisory group, however, whatever it's composed of, does not necessarily, should not be elevated to a board role.
Simply by virtue of the fact that it's a technical advisory group, no.
Yep. Okay, so do we capture those sentiments by there should be an ad hoc technical advisory committees convened by the board, but there was no need for a standing technical advisory body with board representation? Are we all happy with that?
I would support that.
Okay, anybody unhappy with that?
I guess this is Bruce talking again. Just a point of clarification. On board representation, are we distinguishing between voting and non-voting, or are we just saying that board representation includes both of those?
I would have thought that by saying board representation, we're saying not even a seat around the board.
I don't necessarily see a problem with someone sitting as an observer. I mean, basically in Australia, the government, the equivalent of the GAC, if you like, in Australia, is a non-voting observer on a board meeting. They don't say anything.
No.
They're there to observe, and if the board has a question, they will ask that person the question, but they're not there to put input in their own right.
Sure, but what we are envisaging there is a possibility of more than one technical advisory committee, depending on a certain issue. And therefore we have a problem in terms of board representation.
Sure.
Because obviously you don't know how many there will be at any one time.
Yes.
So I'm getting confused here, because on recommendation 26 we're talking about technical bodies, then on recommendation 28 we're talking about a technical committee. Is that it?
Well, the distinction here is under recommendation 26. That's under policy development bodies, and we're talking about the addressing and protocols, SOs as they are now. And under 28, we're talking about purely advisory bodies, and we're envisaging the possibility of advisory committees, effectively.
Okay, I guess the problem I'm running into there is, how do you decide within that committee if you're going to have some sort of an advisory or a observer capacity in the board? You know, that it's so free flowing, a committee like that would seem.
Well, what we're saying at the moment is there would be no board representation as observer otherwise for the advisory committees.
Yeah, my personal feeling is that if you have a technical advisory committee, there should be a delegate from the technical advisory committee who is available to the board for consultative purposes, and to enhance communication between that committee and the board. But I think it needs to be in a capacity somewhat aligned with what Bruce had mentioned before.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with that. I think all you're saying is you clearly need some good liaison, but we're not giving them any formal status
on the board.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
May I make a suggestion?
Thomas, yes.
Because actually the situation we are discussing here is quite symmetric to the one you have with legal advisors. Of course, the board is joined by attorneys in conferences who provides the board with legal advice, and likewise, there should be neutral technical advisors, neutral with respect to individual supporting organizations, which the PSO would obviously not be, and neutral with respect to individual constituencies. So what we actually need to say is that there should be a technical advisory body which provides the board with technical expertise as needed, period. And I suppose we shouldn't even, we should probably just leave out the question if these guys should have a board seat or an observer seat or whatever, and really leave that to the board, whatever the board believes is best for its purposes, to get the advice which is needed should be done, because it's a really organizational question, and we are very close to micromanagement here.
I understand what you're saying there, but I think because we have earlier said there should be separate policy development bodies for addressing and protocols, and there's a board implication to that, because the concept of a technical advisory body had been raised in the BIM proposal, I think it helps to give clarification in terms of what we now are seeing by that, rather than being silent in an area that we have an opinion on. I think that's the sense I'm getting from the council. Harry, did you want to speak?
Dan has joined the conference.
Yeah, would you put me in the queue, please, Philip?
I've got Harry and Ken in the queue. Anyone else? No, then I'll take Harry.
I would certainly agree.
And that's also Court, I believe, is Laurence, who just joined us.
Yes, sorry for being late. Hello, everyone.
Hello, Laurence. You're welcome.
I would certainly agree that this entire set of recommendations may be overly detailed, but it is on the level of detail that it is, and all of a sudden not to be as detailed on a specific recommendation essentially sends the message that this is not something that we care about, that we're concerned about. If the board wants to give these technical committees representation, then it can do so, and what we're effectively doing is offsetting the value of our own set of recommendations. And either we are on a given level of detail describing what we think should be done, or, well, we should be consistent, simply. We peg in on our level of detail and address each single partial issue on that level of detail.
I'm sorry, we are not discussing, for instance, the level of detail and the methods, at this level of detail, the methods by which the board interacts with legal counsel and with other counsels it wants to take into account. And in my suggestion I just made, I was not talking about the PSO. I was assuming that there would be some kind of PSO and that it would be represented on the board level. And the question about which a technical advisory committee would be is, how can the board get neutral, intelligent, well-founded technical advice? Where can they turn to get their questions answered? And whatever the board believes is the best way to do this is okay, because what we are talking about here is not representation, it is a service to the corporation and to the board. This service may possibly be provided by staffers, this service may be provided by external counselors, this service may be provided by some voluntary high-profile committee, and I do not believe we should even think about it as someone being represented. We should think about it as providing the board with needed technical advice.
Thomas, I think what you're saying, you probably find there is board agreement to. Certainly, I understand what you're saying, but my own feeling is that it is important for us to say something on board representation, because in a little while we're going to be talking about board seats and representation, and we therefore need to decide if this technical advisory body or committee should be in or out. It's just as simple as that in my view. I had Ken on the list. Anyone else want to go on the list before I take him?
You can put me on the list. This is Greg Ruth.
And that's Greg to go on the list. Okay, Ken, start talking.
Yeah, I'd like to echo something that was just said. There was an analogy made to legal counsel. Regardless of some of the comments that get thrown around, what it boils down to is that people like Joe Sims are engaged as a legal counsel to the corporation, and as I see it, their sole obligation is to what they perceive to be the best interests of the corporation. I think we have exactly the same type of fiduciary obligation on the part of the people who are providing technical advice to the board. They should only be concerned about what is in the best interests of ICANN as an entity, and it needs to be, I think, elaborated that any issues that they're asked to speak on, their perspective is one of what is of best benefit to ICANN, not what is necessarily perceived as the best benefit to the constituencies that they may come from. And that's a difficult thing sometimes it's tough to get your arms around that concept, but I think people know what I'm talking about there. You may not like what you hear, but it has to be given that way.
Okay, Greg, you're next.
I just wanted to say that I agree with 26 as we currently constituted that, and with the idea for 28 that this would be an advisory body with no voting representation on the board. I agree with all that. It's just that it seems to implicitly, if we go with both of those, it seems to implicitly cut the root name server folks off of representation. And we just be aware of that. If we think that they should be represented somewhere on the board, then we probably have to put them somewhere in 26.
Sure. Right. Maybe or we can take that separately when we get on to board representation directly. That's a useful point. So how about this whole compromise wording then on recommendation 28? First sentence, there should be ad hoc technical advisory committees providing neutral technical advice convened by the board, full stop. There is no need for a standing technical advisory body with board representation. Is everyone happy with that revised wording?
Say that again? There's no need. Read that last
second time. Sentence was, there is no need for a standing technical advisory body with board representation.
Sounds fine to carry.
Philip?
Yeah?
Good morning, Tony Harris. I'm joining late. Are we on 26 now?
Tony, no, we're on 28. In fact, I'm going to go back on a couple of recommendations because we weren't quorate earlier. We are quorate now.
Okay.
And we're just discussing 28, where we've revised the sense of that substantially.
Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yep, no problem.
Philip, I want to make a comment. I'm inclined to agree with, I'm very torn on this, but I'm inclined to agree with Thomas that we're getting a bit into the micromanagement of details, and I could see the Names Council noting that they do not perceive the need for a standing committee with board representation. But in fact, if the board is having a meeting that is heavily about technical issues and they need to invite in technical experts, we would expect them to do so.
Of course, but that doesn't stop any board. There's a difference between having either a voting man on the board or an observer on the board full-time and a board inviting any expert any time to come in and advise it. I think so. And nobody's denying that practical second possibility. We're just saying we don't believe that on the basis of representation of this community, this particular organ needs to be represented on the board, to my view.
In an attending capacity, let alone a voting capacity.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is everyone happy with the wording on 28? I'll just repeat it once more. There should be ad hoc technical advisory committees providing neutral technical advice convened by the board, full stop. There is no need for a standing technical advisory body with board representation. I'll assume silence is consent, so that is adopted. Now that we're quorate, let's just go back and adopt the earlier recommendations we made and point one of the agenda, which is summary of last meeting. Could I have a mover to adopt the summary of the last meeting?
So moved.
Thank you. That was Carrie, I think. Are those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those against, please say no. Those abstaining, please say abstain. Thank you. It's item one, last meeting summary is adopted. Now, earlier today, after discussion, we moved to adopt recommendation 28 technical bodies. I'll read this again. There should be separate policy development bodies for dressing and protocols. there needs to be more effective mechanism for cross-policy development body consultation. All those in favor of adopting, please say aye.
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 Aye. Those against, please say no. Those abstaining, please abstain. Okay, thank you. 27 was also relatively short. There should be a government advisory body. There needs to be improved flow of communication and better coordination with the ICANN policy development bodies. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, please say no. Those abstaining, please abstain. Okay, thank you. That's adopted and we're up to date. That moves us on to recommendation 29, board seats for advisory bodies. And here in the drafting, I've indicated in curly brackets some options for discussion. Currently reading, there should be one non-voting question marks board seat for the government and two the technical advisory body. Note this has implications for recommendation 33, option 2. Now, clearly, we've just ruled out the second option there of a board seat for technical advisory body, but perhaps we can have the discussion about representation of the government advisory body on the board. Should there be such representation either in a full capacity, i.e. with a vote, or an observer capacity, or should there simply be board liaison? It's those three options. Who would like to talk on that?
Philip, before you do, this is Jay Scott.
Yep.
And I'm going to have to drop off. I pass my proxy to Laurent.
Okay. Thank you, Jay Scott.
This is Carrie, Philip. I'm also going to have to drop off. And if, by my count, that means we're going to be in quorum again, right?
That probably does. Never mind, we managed to get in for that 5 minutes while we were quorum, at least.
If I stick around for the next 10, which is pushing it as far as it can be done.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thanks, Carrie. So who would like to speak on GAC representation on the board?
Bruce Tuncan.
Bruce, who else?
Harold Feld.
Harold, who else? Nobody at the moment. Bruce, go ahead.
I would certainly go for, if there is to be a liaison that attends all board meetings, I would certainly say that it should be on a non-voting observer basis.
Right, but you would still want to suggest a full-time observer for board meetings for GAC rather than simply a liaison.
I don't have a strong view on that, but I think given the general view to provide some linkages with government bodies, I support it.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for that opinion. Harold?
On the matter of board seats, and this may not be something that we can answer, but as we've observed with the most recently with this retreat and also at every ICANN meeting where there is a dinner for the that the board members get together prior to the official meeting, having a seat on the board is not just about being present at the meeting and speaking at the meetings as a non-voting equal. It is a certain access into policy development, which nobody else has, and therefore even a non-voting board seat is very significant. Now, having said that, I don't know in my own mind whether it would be better or to have a GAC representative fully participating in these conversations in this manner. But I think that for ourselves, as we're drafting this, we should be thinking about, you know, the genuine level of participation that we're elevating this to, rather than simply thinking that it's only one more person at the table at board meetings who can speak outside of the public forum section.
All right. Anyone else wants to speak on this?
Yeah, this is Ken Stubbs.
Was that Thomas also?
Yes.
Ken. Anyone else?
First.
Okay, Ken, go ahead.
I understand, at least I think I understand Harold's comments. I would be concerned about a couple of things. Number one is, I think that if you have a non-voting observer, I think that that observer has to agree to deal with any issues that are presented with respect to confidentiality or in this area, I think, you know, non-disclosures, any disclosure issues, I think that person has to be bound under the same terms as anyone else who would be participating in a voting capacity. If a person can't deal with that kind of a arrangement, then I think there's where we start running into potential problems. So I think that would have to be something that would be have to be specified in any sort of recommendation that would come up regarding someone in that capacity.
Right, but and your own feeling is neutral on whether there should be a non-voting board member or just a liaison.
At this point in time, any feeling I have would have to be my own personal feeling. I think in when we get into more specifics like this, this has been, how do I put it, presented to us at a last-minute hour, and there is definitely a need for consultation before I think any options could be accepted. From my standpoint, I'd have to take that back to the constituency.
Yeah. Something that's been debated yet. Thomas, you're next.
Well, my comments actually go into a similar direction as Kant's. A board member's first loyalty when this member is acting as a board member has to be the corporation. A government employee's first loyalty when ever acting in his professional capacity has to be the government by which he is employed. A government member acting as a board member has two primary loyalties to fulfill which may not be compatible. A GAC member on the board voting would most likely be a perpetual conflict of interest, so to speak. For this reason, I personally believe that having a voting GAC member on the board would be an extremely bad idea. Now the question is, of course, how far does this argument also apply to non-voting board members? One thing I'm quite sure about is that it would not apply to a liaison. And I think this is something we should keep in mind.
Sure. I think that's an interesting observation. I think Harold's point was very interesting also in terms of the amount of influence that you know a board member, non-voting or other, can have simply by function of that office. The positive side to that is though that you by the very nature of that informal interaction, you may be able to avoid situations where the GAC or the board are making proposals that the other body would find a problem, and the quality of liaison therefore may actually be positive, weighed against perhaps what may be influence undue or otherwise. Other thoughts on this?
Yeah, Bruce Tonkin.
Bruce?
Hey, Marilyn.
Hey, Marilyn. Anyone else? Fine, Bruce, go ahead.
I would just like to say that I think as far as the registrar's constituency goes, there is a paper and it just specifies that really in general terms that you know we see a role there for the GAC. In terms of the technicalities of what you call them, I don't think there's a strong view, but I would say that the idea of liaison I think is better because for the reasons just stated, there is conflict. You know, government representatives are representing the government. My comments about voting and non-voting apply the same way, but I think using the term liaison is a better term.
Uh-huh. Okay. And Marilyn, you're next.
The BC has taken a position that we don't think that government representatives should have voting seats in on the board. I do, and I think it's very important to have, at the same time, I think it's very important to have the GAC participating through either the chair or a specially elected representative who has, in particular, the responsibility of fulfilling that role. It doesn't have to be the chair. The chair, in fact, I would personally say ought to be busy with other things, and so I don't know that we have to restrict it to the chair, and we haven't done that. We said one board non-voting. I do think that in using the language liaison, we need to be sensitive to the implication. And remember that the purpose of this is to bring the GAC into a more supportive role with ICANN.
Yes, I suspect this question, Marilyn, comes down to some cultural differences in the way these different terms are used. I think we're all talking about the same thing, but we're just using different words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. The sense I'm getting is that no one at all thinks that the GAC should be given a voting seat on the board, and that we were somewhat persuaded by the logic that Thomas gave and Harold in terms of the downside of even a formal observer status. However, what we really want to achieve is good communication and good coordination, and we feel that can best be achieved by a liaison role. In which case, I would suggest scrapping all the wording we have at the moment for 29, and substituting something like the GAC chair or GAC designee should provide a permanent liaison to the ICANN board. That sound about right? Tony, yeah?
If I could just add from the ICP perspective on this,
yep.
Certainly we supported the concept that more direct representation should be considered. And when we discussed that, we were really talking about representation at the board level. I don't think anything you've suggested goes against that. So I think we could probably support
right,
what you've put forward there.
Putting the same need. Great. Thank you for that, Tony. Is everybody else happy with that rewording?
Philippe, it's Laurence. First, sorry for being late.
Yeah, no problem.
I just would like to stress that the IPC in its position referred to the fact that consideration should be given in to according ex officio board status to representative of expert institution and intergovernmental bodies, and we also refer to the representation of non-governmental groups. We didn't refer expressly to the GAC, and so it's difficult for me to give a clear position from
okay, but in referring to ex officio position,
yeah.
There, I think we are effectively saying the same thing to my
I don't think that there is a problem.
Okay, then if we're happy with that, we'll adopt that revised wording. That leads us on to recommendation 30, board members from policy bodies.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to scoot.
Gary, okay, then that's understood. And we were 15. Oh, no, that's still got Jay Scott down. Okay, Gary, then thank you very much for being with us so far.
Okay, so
other recommendations, we may have to defer the actual adoption until a future time, but we can nevertheless have a discussion to get the wording that we like now. Recommendation 30 is board members from policy bodies, and here it refers back to our existing recommendation 14, which had simply said that we believe policy bodies should have representation on the board, without specifying how many at the time. And what we're now drafted in 30 is the following. Further to recommendation 14, the four policy development bodies, GTLDs, the CCTLDs, the addressing and protocols, should elect an equal number of board members. So comments on that.
Stubbs, please.
And I think it's interesting. The debate here essentially is: should the weight of board members for each of those policy development bodies be the same, or are there other reasons that one or other should be greater, and that would have implications clearly for any numbers game we play later. I have Ken at the top of the list. Who else would like to speak?
Marilyn,
who else? Fine, Ken, go ahead.
Yeah, I just think the best thing to do, rather than wasting a huge amount of time on this recommendation, is I'm just going to recommend that we take this recommendation out entirely. Frankly, we could argue until the end of the world that equal or unequal, and then we come down further on down, and then we start all over again. I don't believe there should be equal numbers of people, but I also don't believe that there's too much conflict between recommendation 30 and recommendation 33. So either we dump one or we dump the other, and I think I would recommend that we just eliminate recommendation number 30. I'll discuss my reasons for that when we get down to 33.
Okay, I mean part of the reason for that is if one of our objectives is to produce an option or more for board members, we need to have decided on certain things first, and
well, if that's the case, let's talk economics and impact. You know, first of all, if you're going to populate the board equally with members of each one of these bodies, then there should be some sort of responsibility for financial support for ICANN based on representation on the board, or at least it should have some sort of bearing there. And frankly, I'm not seeing that from many people at this point in time.
Sure, well, that's certainly one perspective, Ken. Although the view on financing that we agreed earlier was perhaps a different one. Marilyn, you were next in the queue, and do I hear other voices who want to join?
Yeah.
Say again.
Thomas.
Who else? No. Then Marilyn first.
I want to make a comment about what we expect of board members before I comment about the allocation of board seats. I think what we're trying to accomplish with a board is to have a board that moves itself above being an advocate for a particular point of view and tries to look at the common good for the purpose of supporting a global internet that is stable, interoperable, and interconnected. And avoid some of the risk of balkanization and other kinds of detrimental things that might happen. We need to, and I think for that reason, that maintaining a balance in the representation from the policy development entity is important. It's important because it keeps people involved as stakeholders, it keeps them working to support the broader mission of ICANN, and it helps to ensure that the broad community that they represent understands the importance of ICANN. So my own perspective and the BC's perspective has been that a balance of board seats across the different policy entities should be maintained.
Okay, so you would support having an equal number for each.
I would, and I also will keep reiterating at every opportunity that, you know, what we're trying to do is keep policy making at a different level and have a board that is approving policy recommendations and not making and generating policy recommendations to the extent we can achieve them.
Sure. Okay, Thomas, you're next.
But I was in the queue there.
Sorry. Harold, sorry, I didn't realize I had you in the queue as well. Thomas, go ahead. Harold will be next.
Not so long, I can pass to Harold.
Okay, Harold, go ahead.
All right, I'm going to have to address 30, 31, and 32, at least in general here, and I think we're going to have to consider these things together, because Marilyn has put her finger right on it, which is that we're trying to consider in these recommendations what sort of a board we are going to have. And there have consistently been two models fighting within the vision of ICANN. One is this very narrow technical body in which really all you would need are recommendation 30, and you would not bother with recommendations 31 and 32 because none of us would care. It would be pretty irrelevant. The other is the ICANN that, as it has been panning out, which is one that makes decisions that have significant impact beyond the technical, and therefore we are very concerned about who is going to be on the board, and that it have a significant cross-section from all of the potentially affected groups, so that the people who are at the very least approving the policy decisions can have some sense, or will be informed by the experiences of people beyond a very narrow scope, and therefore have some vision about what are going to be the likely ripple effects from these decisions. I think that as regards to Recommendation 30 itself, I cannot... I have to protest very strongly to Ken's idea that you have to buy your way onto this board in order to have some legitimacy to speak. This is not any kind of a model that I know of in terms of how decisions that affect a very broad population are made. I think, in fact, the board would hurt itself thereby, both in terms of its legitimacy, because it would really give ammunition to those who think that ICANN is a captured special interest organization, and to those who are cut out of the process with no reason to respect its decision.
I'd like to respond to what Harold just said, Philip.
Okay,
there was a characterization there that I didn't imply, and I don't like, I'd appreciate. I wasn't talking about buying your way into the board, Harold. What I was saying was that there has to be some sort of an indication that there is a some sort of support for the entity that, in effect, is administering this. The other side of the coin is those people who would want to be involved in the creation and implementation of policies and procedures, who then proceed to turn around and say that even though they want to be involved in creating these policies and procedures, they want to make it very clear that they're not subject to any of the policies that they're creating. This is one of the issues we get into with CCTLDs. And so I just want you to say, know that I'm not just, it's not a matter of buying your way onto the board, and that characterization is
I apologize if I took your word support in the context in which you were saying it. I was pretty sure I heard the word financial in there too, and so
that's correct. Like it or not, the entity doesn't operate without adequate funding. All I'm saying is that there has to be some sort of recognition that there is an obligation somewhere to fund this thing, and it isn't just a matter of taking but giving as well. It doesn't necessarily need to be purely financial, but it has to be practical. That's all.
Okay, thank you, Ken, for clarification. And Thomas, you're next.
Well, actually, I was going to suggest something procedural, but I'm not sure it's still needed. The suggestion would be that we limit in time the discussion of the options of recommendation 33 and defer this to email, because I have a sense that some constituents, or rather I had a sense that constituencies may be divergent on this, and that it may be more helpful to have a comprehensive picture of constituencies' ideas before discussing this in detail. But this may not be necessary. Still, I would suggest that we try to limit the time we spend on this.
Sure, I understand what you say. My concern is that the experience of email interaction between our calls on this topic has not been a healthy one. say I'm a little reluctant to leave things to that, but nevertheless, I think it's useful to have some discussion so that we at least get nearer to where we may be on consensus, even if we don't complete those points. What I'm hearing so far is that no one is in support of an unequal number of board members. Nobody has explicit policy suggesting that. Is that correct from the various constituencies?
Are we talking only about recommendation
30? Yes.
30.
So just from the four policy development bodies that we say should have some sort of representation on the board. My question is: does anybody believe that that representation should be unequal? We heard earlier from the business constituency that they explicitly said it should be equal for each four body, each four of those bodies.
You're hearing that from me at this point in time, but I can only tell you, as I said before, Philip, that the I don't think there's been enough time for consultation on these models. I guess it would depend on the procedures that are used. If somebody who represents a body is willing to recuse themselves when it comes to creation of procedures, laws, whatever you want to call them, that they refuse to abide by, that makes it entirely different. But I cannot see putting somebody on the board of directors of an entity who creates policies, procedures, and for all intents and purposes, let's codify some of these procedures almost to the extent of a law, and then proceeds to turn around and say, even though I was involved in the creation of these, I need to let you know that I do not feel in any way whatsoever bound to these policies and procedures that I insisted I'd be involved in creating. That's where it starts to get very, very muddy and sticky for me.
Well, can I respond to that?
Yeah, before you do, let me just understand the point. I mean, the concept of policy development bodies with equal number of board members is what we have today. And are you saying that you see problems in that conflicts of interest or derogation of duty today as a function of equal representation of the SOs?
Not necessarily today, although I am very concerned about some of the issues. I think where I see potential in the future is that certain bodies have taken positions with respect to ICANN as they view it even in the future that would imply that they don't feel obligated at all to comply. And I guess a lot of this just needs to work its way out, you know.
Okay, so this would be particularly relevant to the CCTLDs who have a different view as to the influence of ICANN on their world.
I think so. To a great extent, it does. Yes.
Yeah.
I haven't heard as much from some of the other organizations yet, although I'm very anxious to get input from the other SOs as well.
Sure.
Okay.
So I'd like to speak when I'm getting to Tony
okay,
Harris.
Okay, so let me take a new list. I have Tony Harris. I heard Marilyn, was it?
No, I had put in a previous request to respond to that.
Who was that? That was Harold. Yes, you did. I'll put you at the top of the list. Who else? No, then Harold, please start.
All right, I just... There are two points that I would make as regards to this, which is, one, there are very good reasons why people who are taking the position that they are not subject to a particular policy or agreement would want to and should have the right to participate. I mean, number one is they could ultimately discover that their position is wrong or decide that their position is wrong, that they are covered by the policy, and that therefore they don't want to give up the possibility of influencing what could be very important to them if they have to live in that system, even if their position at the moment is that they don't have to live in that system. And the other thing is this happens, frankly, in the policy regulatory world all the time. We have, in the United States at least, I can only speak to the United States experience, routinely at regulatory agencies, groups that are coming in because they are affected by policy, potentially interested by policy, but who also take a very explicit position that we don't think this policy should apply to us. And the process benefits from the input from these groups. Now, you know, the thing that I think has been frustrating has been that the consensus requirement has sometimes been used to freeze policy development because you have one actor that digs in its heels and says, well, you know, our interest is in delay and we're not going forward. That is a separate problem from who should participate and should be dealt with separately.
If you'll notice, I never said participation. I said recusal. And what I'm really talking about is nothing wrong in participating in this process. But if you reach a point in time in which a proposed action is one in which you refuse to comply with, then you should not be part of the creation of an action that you will not abide by. That's the point I'm talking about. You can participate, but it's a blatant conflict between the body in which you're proposing initiates the action and the body you represent, who is the beneficiary, whether it's positive or negatively, of the action that you're proposing. And then I feel you have a problem. It's like creating a process that you won't live with. And that it's just nonsensical to me.
Well, I would just add one other thing, which is we seem to be having different definitions of the word recused, because where I come from, if I am recused from a process, I don't participate at all. In fact, I put up what we call in the legal profession a Chinese wall, and, you know, I don't even, you know, whisper thoughts about it to other people. But so if you're talking about participation but not final decision-making, we really need to, I would ask us to please be precise about what we're talking about.
I apologize. I'm not a lawyer, and I thought that the explanation surrounding the word made it clear that I wasn't talking about the legal process.
Sure. Okay, Tony Harris, you're next on the list.
Yes, I'd like to say, first of all, I agree with Ken Stubbs. I think the question of the CCTLDs does require careful thought. But I think when, as a constituency, the ISPCP, we have made our statements clear. They've been published on the website as to the desire for symmetry, for symmetrical supporting organizations. We're not thinking of a maverick supporting organization of CCTLDs who are on the board but go their own way when they don't feel like complying. I think we're talking about CCSO, which would be post agreements. In other words, once they have agreed to cooperate or to come into line with an organization such as ICANN. And the second thing I'd like to say is I don't know if we should continue discussing 30 through 32 before looking at 33, because, I mean, unless we agree on 33 which option the Names Council is comfortable with, the other three will complicate things, the ones that we're looking at right now.
Sure, Jay. I think what I tried to have done in the drafting here was to separate out those points where there are some principles to be discussed, like should there be equal number of board members, yes or no, board seats for the SOs, yes or no, which means it could be a minimum of three or maximum the whole board, and then you sort of add those to the other things which help lead you to a coherent idea of the final numbers.
No objection with that.
Yeah.
I just feel, though, that there was a proposal just now from Thomas. Let's not discuss 33, but I think 33 is the crux of the whole issue.
Sure,
because
it's a consequence from 30 to 32. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Once you know you want them equal, you want GTLD, CCTLDs addressing protocols equal. You want at large members equal or unequal. You want a CEO, and then you can just stuff together the numbers. The only variable you have left over is the total number of board seats. So in this case, if you have really answers to 30 to 33, you also have the answers to 33. If you have answers for 30 to 32, you have the answers for 33. There's actually no point in tackling 33 first.
I would agree with that.
30 to 32 is a number of equations. You have one equation left, that's the sum of all, and if you solve them, you get 33.
Very well, maths has proved everything as usual. Thank you, Thomas, for that.
Okay, I stand corrected.
in the weight of an equation. Tony, thank you for your comments. Marilyn, you're next.
I think I'm probably echoing something of what I heard Tony say. The reason I don't think this is going to be a problem is that I'm assuming that just as there are now requirements for the characteristics of SOs in order to be recognized, I would assume that there would need to be characteristics for a policy body, whether it continues to be called an SO or it's called something else, and that in order to be the recognized policy body for the ASO or for addressing or for protocols or for CCTLDs or for GTLDs, there would be certain characteristics that would need to be met. I don't support that means that those characteristics are necessarily, that funding is necessarily built into that, but I think that the other operational characteristics, support, participation, identification of who the offices are, bylaws about process, that there would have to be some kind of consistency in order to be the recognized policy entity.
Sure, thanks for that. I think the point that Tony mentioned earlier, and you've just referred to this, the idea that we would hope that before any new policy development body is allowed to have board seats, they would at least be obligated that a condition of accepting board membership would be an agreement to abide by board decisions. I mean, that's what we're saying, I think, isn't it?
So this is Harold. Can I address that?
Harold, yes, please do.
I think that there is an issue as between, to take the CCTLDs, for example, although they can certainly speak for themselves, between saying we think that, ICANN is a good idea and that it has certain policy responsibilities and that CCTLDs should have a say in that, and saying a particular policy that we want to vote on applies to a CCTLD. You can broadly agree with the general principle and still have particular policies that you think under the terms of ICANN's bylaws and documents don't apply to a particular constituency. And there can be honest debate about that.
Okay. Thanks for that. Other perspectives on this?
Actually, may I intervene with a question? Because
yep.
The one option we have is to have an equal number of seats for CCTLDs, GTLDs, ASO, PSO, however they will be called. The other option would obviously be to have a smaller number of seats for the CCSO, or a greater number, but I don't think anyone is asking for that. So the question is, does having a smaller number of CCSO seats solve the problems about which we are talking, or are we rather talking about the internal design of the CCSO? Like, for instance, and it's just as an example, limiting membership in the CCSO to such country code top-level domains which have a signed contract with ICANN. And I repeat, it is an example, but it would be one possible option to address these concerns. And in this case, the CCSO would look, I think, kind of symmetric to the GTLD, to the GTLD registry's constituency. This should be something we think about, and we should make sure that we separate the number of board seats from that particular issue.
Thomas, that's a very good perspective, because indeed we're having an argument about representational balance, but where the concern is actually the nature of the representation of a new policy development body and how that would pan out. And we haven't yet had indeed discussion about composition and qualification for that.
But
I think that's Yeah.
But let me caution us that establishing characteristics for a policy development body need to be relatively uniform, and we should not be assuming that we are going to be transposing those requirements onto the new entity, but rather that there should be some standards that all entities should adhere to.
Yeah, I think that sounds like something we would mostly agree with. Okay, what I suggest we do, because we can't actually vote on this now, let's leave 30 as is at the moment. We've had that discussion. I may make some fresh wording based on this discussion for that. And just in the remaining minutes, talk about the concept of a nominating committee, both its existence and possible composition. That's recommendations both 31 and 32. The key recommendation 31 is saying that if there was going to be space on the board that is not from policy development bodies, do we think that doing that via the idea of a nominating committee is a good one, and should that also be a number equal to the representation of policy development bodies, or a lesser or greater number? And if a nominating committee seems to be like a good way, that might also represent at large interests, how should that nominating committee itself be composed in order to make a series of wise nominations? So who would like to speak on 31 and 32?
Harold,
who else?
Bruce,
who else?
Yeah.
Marilyn, who else?
Thomas,
who else?
Tony,
who else? I'll keep us going very nicely. Harold.
All right. Well, I first apologize if I speak a little bluntly here, but this goes to the core. You know, if the NCC has a position on anything, it is on the at-large and the role of a nominating committee. You know, we have continually reaffirmed the idea that elections need to be direct to have validity. Now, perhaps direct elections are off the table, in which case, though, I would say that we should simply eliminate the notion of an at-large as a fiction and have ICANN proceed solely as a technical coordinating body with an appropriately narrow scope. A nominating committee is frankly, you know, particularly one which is going to select a small pool that will then be decided in some closed system by the existing board of directors, is a recipe for a self-perpetuating oligarchy in which the same names and the same interests will be recycled over and over again. And whatever hope that there is going to be some kind of outside expertise incorporated in here is, it seems to me, illusory. You know, any outside expertise could be gotten through ad hoc committees if we're not going to have a genuine broad election. So I would, you know, if we can't get direct elections, you know, this certainly does not serve as an accountability mechanism, which is one of the primary roles of direct elections, then let's do away with the fiction of an at-large altogether and shrink ICANN down to its technical coordinating mission only.
Harold, just a question in terms of an interim measure. Given that today we don't have a at-large organization capable of electing at-large directors, would you be unhappy with the concept of a nominating committee to nominate interim at-large directors against criteria which satisfy the at-large aspiration?
Well, I mean, we have some interim directors who are still on the board, you know, the great fear is you don't know how this is going to work out. And, you know, we had this debate going all the way back to Cairo, which is, you know, nominating committees are in some ways a good thing in that they make sure that there's some sort of competency level, but unless there is some way of going outside the nominating committees, and putting in, you know, a an outsider candidate, then it is, you know, the nominating committee simply becomes a device for perpetuating the current interests on the board.
But doesn't, sorry, but aren't you presupposing a composition of a nominating committee there, as opposed to the concept itself? I suppose the nominating committee was exclusively ex-prime ministers, assuming they were the least bit interested. Would you be much happier with that than the concept of the existing DNSO stakeholders in the nominating committee and nobody else?
I mean, there are, you know, you can play with permutations to try to make it better, and certainly I will take back to the constituency any of these permutations. But my own, and this has to be a personal feeling at the moment, is that any sort of, unless there is a mechanism that makes the nominating committee itself somehow truly open, whatever, you know, council of village elders you have is at least going to be subject to the appearance of being a self-perpetuating oligarchy rather than, you know, a council of elders. And
yeah,
this is one of the reasons why we hold public elections.
Okay, that's clear, Howard. Thanks. Bruce, you're next.
Yeah, the registrar's constituency supports the concept of the nominating committee, but we don't view it quietly as blackly, I guess, as Thomas does there, because the registrar's constituency, the registrar's constituency believes the members of the nominating committee should be voted or elected, in other words, so that the members of the nominating committee would be elected, and they would have representation from the providers, the end users of the internet.
Okay, so your view of a nomination committee would be that each of the usual stakeholders would elect to that, and would there be others as well, other non-traditional stakeholders, or just that group?
Well, this has been the topic of most debate amongst the registrars, not so much about whether there should be a nominating committee, but how the nominating committee should be composed. So it ends up shifting the board discussion to being the nominating committee discussion. But in very general terms, you know, we talk about there being providers, which should be the registrars, the registries, the users, which are the non-commercial organisations, commercial organisation and individual users. And potentially there's also a discussion of other interests, potentially government as well.
Right. Okay. Marilyn, you're next.
It's an interesting idea that Bruce just raised about, you know, ensuring that the nominating committee is elected, and I think that that would probably be a useful addition, and could probably be supported by the BC. The BC has supported from the beginning the need to maintain seats that are representative of the at-large, and we put a lot of time and energy into working with the at-large study committee to try to ensure that there was a process that could lead to elections, that could be supportable and could result in informed board members who had a sustained organization behind them. We still hope and think that that process should continue, and for that reason, I would like to ensure that, although I'm not opposed to a nominating committee, and I'm saying I'm not opposed because we haven't gone into enough detail in the BC, the nominating committee does need to be limited in some ways, and I think that's what we should probably focus on. How do we achieve a nominating committee that has broad enough representation that it itself will select a number of board members that are broadly representative? That means that the representatives of the nominating committee need to include representatives of the stakeholders that are identified or that emerge, and then there needs to be a method for representing the at-large who actually participate in the nominating committee. I think that if we also spoke about the need to ensure that at least six of those seats are designated to the at-large, so that if an election became possible next year, if thresholds were met, an election became possible next year, then those seats could devolve out of the nominating committee process and be managed in that larger at-large process.
Okay, Mary, thank you. Thomas, you're next.
Well, first of all, the confusion between Harold and me was not so horrible, because, in fact, I can echo most of what Harold has said. First of all, I believe that it is very safe to state that the members of the GA, and you can't access to the record, please, would mostly prefer the original at-large model, period. That's the first thing. The second thing is, and that's a somewhat weaker one, I believe also that most GA members would prefer the model suggested by the at-large study committee over a nomination committee approach. I do not remember any positive postings on the GA on a nominating committee approach. And indeed, I would also caution that a nominating committee does not have to lead to these common good oriented these common good oriented members and decisions, which are envisioned, for instance, in the somewhat lyrical part of the discussion paper from the Evolution and Reform Committee on this. There is a specific danger with a nominating committee which elects a number of board seats which is close to the number of members of the nominating committee. And that danger is that there may be room to strike deals like, okay, my constituency gets a member on the board, your constituency gets a member on the board, and we are all happy. All this will achieve is to lift the constituency representativeness in the nominating committee to the board level. So the nominating committee, in order to be forced to compromise, has to be larger than the number of seats it has to fill. Otherwise, everyone can just get his representative through and everybody's happy. That should not happen, and that would be very detrimental. The second thing I would caution against is to replicate in a nominating committee the constituency structure of the DNSO. We have DNSO board seats. DNSO board seats are in the recommendations already. And for this reason, I do not believe that the current board member selection process through the names council should be replicated on a smaller scale possible in a nominating committee in disguise. A nominating committee, if used at all, and I emphasize, I believe it is a bad idea altogether, if used at all, the nominating committee must be forced to compromise by its structure, and it must not replicate existing selection structure. For this reason, I would personally support the idea to have another look at the at-large committee's at-large study committee recommendations, possibly at a later point of time, because this year there seems to be no chance to actually get elections implemented. Okay.
Thomas, thank you for that perspective. Tony, you're next.
Thank you for that. Having listened to this, some of the views expressed aren't that far away from the ISPCP. A lot of what Harold said, we concur with a lot of the fears. In fact, in the ISPs, there hasn't been any support at all for the concept of a nominating committee. We question whether such a scheme could ever fulfill the requirements of openness and transparency. Certainly, we didn't feel in any way that either of those things could be fulfilled if it operated in the way it was set out in the Stuart Lynn paper. There hasn't been any positive discussion about a nominating committee, and the way we've actually viewed this really means that we would need to have the debate first about whether it could actually work before we get into taking this any further. So to get into the scenarios even that were set out in recommendation 33, we wouldn't be able to align ourselves with any of those scenarios, because we still at this stage remain totally opposed to the idea of a nominating committee. Now, maybe some of the points that Bruce raised need to be discussed on a broader basis, but until you can actually understand how this thing is going to be formed, how it's going to work, who's going to be involved, then I don't think you can go beyond that and discuss it in a wider vein at all.
Sure.
So at this stage, we remain opposed to the concept of this.
And your alternative, Tony, is filling all the seats via the policy development bodies, or having an at-large electorate as well? What's the view of the ISPs on that?
Certainly, any structure you have which you can agree on, then you have to look at how that relates through to the board level. Now, the actual details of that, I think, are points that we would be willing to discuss wider. We also accept, similar to the BCs, that there needs to be some at-large representation. So we can actually discuss both of those aspects, but the whole concept of a nominating committee, we just remain opposed to at this stage, because we cannot see it working in an open, transparent, and practicable way.
Right. Okay, I think we're now 10 past the hour. The call was due to end. So I think I'll probably call the end now. We've had, I think, unsurprisingly, perhaps the most divided opinion over these last recommendations, 30 to 32. What I will do is try to draft some compromises, or indeed options, on some of these for further discussion, and would very much welcome input by email on that. It may well be we end up making separate recommendations, or clearly sharing the constituencies that support certain views and those who support others, which may mean that perhaps indeed we are unable to conclude as a names council body on the idea of 33 and actual board number options, but we can see to that for the future. One topic that did come up here, which also struck me that we had not satisfactorily done before, because under earlier recommendations on policy development, these are recommendations 18 through 24, we're essentially talking about the GTLD policy development body. And it may be useful to have some perspectives on the CCs. I think Elizabeth Portneuve had mentioned, if she had a moment, she was going to try to do a draft on that. And perhaps, Oscar, you could encourage that to still take place, because that may be useful to exchange ideas in terms of the structure of such a body there, particularly as there were a number of issues that arose in relation to board representation for that new body. And any other suggestions for topics for our next call would also be welcome. Please make those by email, and we can adopt them for the agenda. Other final comments anyone would like to make before we close?
Thomas?
Yes. No, Thomas. Anybody else?
Marilyn.
Anyone else? Nope. Then go ahead.
Okay, what I would like was, due to time reasons, I'd basically just like to ask that we add this to next month's agenda. I have some comments on some technical comments on recommendations 18, 19, and 23, and substantive comments on recommendations 24 and 25. 13, 19, this is WHO and other stakeholders. 23 is extremis, and the ones with the substantial contributions are General Assembly and public consultation.
Okay, Thomas,
I have already submitted something via email some week ago, I think.
Oh, okay. Then
I can resend it.
Yeah, that'll be helpful if you had those on those particular recommendations, so we can all see that and react. Marilyn.
I just wanted to note that, again, at the close, that we should expect a document out from the Evolution Reform Committee, and perhaps our next call should primarily focus on both where we are in relation to our considerations and what is put forward from that committee.
Sure. What we've done so far, I think, has a number of the questions raised in the document so far, I think, are ones that we are answering in whole or in part. But clearly, this next document will be useful to look at and and continue to do the same, so we can add that to the agenda as well, and certainly we'll have that circulated once it's available.
And then my final comment is that you will have the document, the status report, from the Transfers Task Force that has to be reviewed so that it can go forward to the board by the 10th.
Right, so we'll have that a few days in advance of our next call by email.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would encourage all constituencies, please, to share that with their colleagues and constituencies, so that we can have an informed and rapid debate at our next call, which is scheduled for Thursday the 6th of June. I think that's a week, just over a week away. Okay, everybody, thank you very much indeed.
Yep.
Thank you,
Philippe.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.